I do not learn from people who always agree with me. This is Instant Inspiration, Dr. Ariel Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California. I do not learn from people who always agree with me. The President of the United States has an advisory council. In fact, he has a number of advisory councils. And these advisory councils are paid a very fabulous sum, $1 a year. And they have put aside all of their work at their major corporations where they were executives or where they were CEOs or whatever, and they gave their 100% attention to the President and to the United States. And they also did something else. They divested themselves of any stock holdings that could be thought that they were giving themselves special treatment as a counsel to the President. Because whatever they owned, naturally, if it grew while they were in the office, the people would think, well, sure, you're just helping yourself. But that never works either, because they're going to have it back, you know, at the time that they change their role. But the President does not learn from people who always agree with him. The President has his advisory council to offer think tank experiences. And they sit together in their think tank and go over these ideas. Now, the President doesn't want to hear how they wiped their bottom with toilet paper. He doesn't want to hear what they had for lunch and that they prayed and meditated like they should do. He doesn't want to hear all of, he wants to hear something sparkling and something dynamic about what is going to bring about diplomacy in the world, what is going to take care of the problems of the United States, what's going to handle the benefits for the aged as they are, their Social Security is running out, and many other things. Now, that he wants to hear that. Now, he doesn't have to act upon it, but he wants to be informed upon it. He has read this stuff, he has a general idea of it, and he has a brilliant mind, and he retains information very beautifully. But he wants to hear the ideas of these people from their point of view, not because they think that's what he wants to hear. If they tell him what they think he wants to hear, they are of no value on his advisory committee. Because he does not need people to tell him that what he's doing is right or what he's doing is wrong. All he wants people to tell him is, what would happen if we did this? Which may be something he's doing. What would happen if we do this? And it may be something he's not doing. What would happen if we were to have a face-to-face confrontation with Hussein? What if President Bush and Hussein were put into a room and allowed to sit and talk? Of course, Hussein speaks Arabic. I think he probably speaks English, too.
I'm sure
he does. And so they could have a confrontation of talking together. And I don't think Hussein is a stupid man.
Mm-mm.
He is not going to, he is stupid from our point of view in many ways, but he's not going to violate the President. And the President certainly has no reason to violate him. So they sit discussing these things and coming up, perhaps more than that, the Prime Minister of England and the Prime Minister of France and Germany and a few other major countries, and Japan even, meeting with him and saying, now look, the reason we're upset with you is for this reason. Well, now, he says, well, that doesn't seem like it's because of the economic thing, because you want my oil and stuff like that. Well, yes, we want your oil. I mean, be perfectly frank about it, we want your oil, because that helps our nation run. But if we don't get your oil, we'll get it from somewhere, or we'll make something else to fulfill the bill. And so you just talk to them, and you say, now, look, if your country were to do this, if it were to be in harmony with itself, and you were to have whatever the sanctions are that the American Red Cross or the World Red Cross and the world group of for the benefit of the people, you know, if you're willing to talk with them and work with them and maintain a certain solidarity within your country of harmony and peace and care for your own people, hey, that's great. But if we see a great big cancer in a country that is destroying the country, destroying the people, and not appreciating human rights, then the United Nations must step in and say that's not acceptable. You know. Now, true, the people from Iraq, they really don't know that they're not getting a good deal. They really don't know. And of course, Russia was the same way, as I said with Stalin. The people would love to have Stalin back. And you say, they're crazy. Of course they're crazy, but it was Papa. And it was a feeling of unity in the country, and it was a feeling of our fatherland, just like Hitler. I mean, we say those are crazy things. Anyone who want to have that type of leadership back, but they do. And Iraq is a perfect example of that. And any dictatorial nation is a perfect example of that. And when the war started with Iraq, the people who were not in Iraq, but who were Iraqians, wanted to go back and fight for their country in their country. They wanted to go back, even from the United States. They wanted to have passports to go back and be, because they're Iraqian citizens. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to go back and fight for their country. And many were allowed to do so. Many were allowed to, I don't know how many, but many were allowed to do so. But you see, here they had the vision of the United States. They saw how things were done here. They went to England, they saw how things were done. They went probably to Europe and other countries and saw how things were done. And still, they loved their own country best. Just like the Stalinites, they loved Russia better under Stalin than they did under any other way. And many would not want to leave the country. Now, how many people in East Germany wanted to get across the border? Very few. Maybe a couple hundred thousand. You say, well, that's not a few. But that's very few compared to the total population of millions, mm-hmm. really. And they make it seem that the people want to escape that culture. And we look at the culture and we say, boy, if I were there, I'd want to escape too. But that's because we come from a different culture. Now, the Russians would have been wise to let the people go who didn't want to be there, because they were a cancer to their to the Russian point of view. And the same with any other country. If people want to go, let them go. Mexico doesn't care at all. If its people wants to come here, that's fine. You know why? Because a Mexican is always a Mexican. American is always American. A German is always a German. What's your fatherland? What's your homeland? Where did you come from? What sort of culture did you wake up under? You see, I do not learn from people who always agree with me. I learn from people who stimulate my intelligence, who stimulate my thinking, who stimulate my attitudes in new directions and new ways of looking at it. Now, you know about this fellow who designed this two-wheeled cart that works on a gyroscopic principle and stands up straight and you just stand on it, and he wanted it for delivering mail and things like that. Well, that's just great. But the mailman didn't want it. The mailman didn't want it, not because it was a nice thing or not a nice thing, but because their hands would get cold while they're holding on to the scooter thing and going around, whereas as they're walking around, their hands are fumbling through the mail and sorting it out and getting it all set for the next party, the next party, the next party. And the walking keeps them warm in cold weather. And of course, in the east and the north, we have a lot of cold weather. And all, you know, every winter, fall and spring, it's cold. And the mailman, through sleet and snow and hail and rain and fire and storm, he gets the mail through. That's what it is. So, you see, when the postmaster hears this sort of thing, and he knows this sort of thing, then he is not going to encourage something which is going to be disharmonious to the mail carriers. Because even though it costs quite a bit of money, quite a bit of money for those little scooters, the post office was thinking of buying them for the mailmen. Do you know how many mailmen there are in the United States alone?
Lots.
Wow, lot is right. And now, do you think our mail woman would use it? Hardly.
No.
She has too many miles to go between stops, you know. And it would be impractical for a rural delivery, you know. And for house delivery in town, You're going to have to go up the stairs and come down the stairs and do this and stop there and here. And you see, the post office has enough trouble having the postmen keep their postal vehicles locked when they make a delivery, because they have to lock it and lock it each time they get out. Mm. And that is a pain in the neck, you know. So these are things that are brought to the attention of the postmaster. These are things that are brought to the attention of the president. Not necessarily the details of the postal company, but all sorts of projects that might be beneficial for the people of the United States. And more inexpensive drugs for the people of the United States. Now, this is brought to the attention of the president. And they say to them, now, we have a vested interest in our drug companies here, and they develop these drugs, and we cannot let people go buying drugs from India and from Canada and from other places because they're much cheaper, much cheaper. And whose side are you on? Whose side are you on? You're taking away the money from the elderly, and then you're making their drugs more expensive, and then they have to pay for a lot of that themselves because it's not generic, and generic drugs are expensive too. So the president hears all these sort of things, and he makes his decision based upon what his heart tells him. And sometimes his heart is misguided a little bit because he hears that there's only about 100,000 people who try to get out of Russia, out of East Germany, out of the many millions. And he says, yes, that's important, but it's not primary. It's not primary. Primary important is that you talk with the Russians and you say, hey, why don't you just let those people go? Because they're a bother to you, they're a pain in the neck, and it keeps your soldiers busy at the borders and stuff like that. You know, if someone had gone to Stalin or whoever was in charge at that time and talked Turkey with them like that, not trying to make them change their mind, but let them understand there's no benefit in that. They might have even changed their mind. They might have even, but it probably is, you've got to do this, you've got to do that, or else we're going to do this to you, you know. And nobody likes to hear that. And the president, least of all, likes to hear people, his counselors, going, you've got to do this and you've got to do that. He says, oh, you have a vested interest there or something? Yeah, that's what it's all about. And we have to be very cautious, because sometimes I say, Sylvia, you've got to go down to the post office and pick up your check from the whatever for $2 million. Mm-hmm. And Sylvia said, I won't do it. I won't do it because you make me do it. You say, I got to do it. I won't do it. And I said, Sylvia, oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm your worst enemy by saying this. You know. But if I say, Sylvia, there's a check for $1 million at the post office when you get around to $5 million. When you get around to it, go pick it up. And Sylvia say, oh, thank you very much.
And
you know,
oh, geez.
You know, yeah, you know, she gets around to it, so forth. Immediately. But you see, when the presentations are made in the proper manner, now, who is the court jester? That's the court clown, you know, in the king's court. And the court jester says, ha ha, the king's going to have a war. And then he says, they're making him have a war. They don't like him. They're going to make him have a war, and he's going to kill his people, his best people. And ha, 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 ha. And the king doesn't say, shut up, you stupid fool, because he knows he's a stupid fool. But he thinks about it, and he thinks, that's right. I'm letting myself be pushed into this war in which I will lose many of my good men and many of my leading military strategists for nothing, because they want to make me have the war. They're tantalizing me and taunting me. And like Hussein, if he would just have made a few little changes, he wouldn't have had to do what he did, or the United Nations wouldn't have had to do what they did. And of course, they're blaming it all on the United States, and that's fine. The United States has big shoulders. But the world will come to realize the benefit from it as it progresses, as they would have before. What did they say in the Korean War and the other war, the Vietnamese War and so forth? They said, why didn't you finish the job? You know? Well, we think it's terrible because they didn't go in and finish the job. And of course, today we're suffering under the concept, But the North Koreans are fabulous in their mental attitude and in their technology and in their not democracy, but in their creativity of businesses. Or they're fabulous. And South Koreans are right close to them, but the South Koreans have a defeated attitude about them. So they're not as successful as the North Koreans. You follow me? Mm. And so, you see, with this, if we could just learn to deal with these people and come in as a catalyst to encourage them to do their finest and best, miracles would happen. We did that in Taiwan. We did that in Thailand. We did that in many of the other countries. And we did it in Japan and Germany. We did it in Japan and Germany. We told Japan and Germany, you cannot go to war. You cannot make war. You cannot have bombs. You cannot have ships. You cannot have planes. You cannot have anything for fighting. And so they had to spend all their money for their own benefit, for their schools and their churches and their whatever they did, and for roads and hospitals and all the good stuff, all the benefit of the people. And so their country is just powerful with things that are to the benefit of the people. And Germany the same way. Germany became another world power because it didn't have to spend its money on war. Mm-hmm. Now France, it is playing back and forth, so it's mm-hmm. got a little bit of a problem there. But you see, if we could get in there and advise these people or diplomize, be a diplomat and be an ambassador with these people and show them the benefits of some of these things, because we cannot control them anymore. Our control of Japan is over. Our control of Germany is over. Our control of any country in war, in the Philippines, what have you. We gave them all up. And when we gave them up, there was the feeling that they had to try their wings, you know. And they had to try to do what they could do. But soon that ended. And they went on and did great things. Now, I do not learn from people who always agree with me. I learn from people who challenge me and the people who set new patterns for me, as we have been rewriting the Art and Science of Wholeness and upgrading it so that it will be another fabulous book. As everyone has said, there's nothing much to change. There's nothing much to change, just a grammatic attitude here or a concept here, but nothing much to change. And this is what will happen. I do not learn from people who always agree with me, but I learn from people who come up with beautiful concepts to improve their life, my life, and the world. I love you and have a wonderful evening. And remember, you do not learn from people who agree with you. That's tough. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.